Tash, how you doing?
I'm all good.
Very good. I'm excited about another week's bit of production meetings podcast. We've got a double header today for you.
Of course. Who have we got?
We've got Sam Hunter and Julia Whittle, the folk that do, well, have done for years, all the Olympic opening and closing ceremonies, and some of the biggest shows in the West End. So a bit of a treat.
One of them is the host of Jigjaw, which I watched the first episode of today.
So Jigjaw, yes, we'll talk about...
I did.
We'll talk about Jigjaw with Jew, because that's just priceless.
Cracking.
I feel humbled in the presence of greatness.
Oh, I'm just saying. Oh, shut up.
No, but seriously.
Not that line. So have you typed that? Is one of your cue cards?
It's on my auto cue right in front of me. That's the thing. But I am humbled because I am now, as I was just saying to Sam just before you came on, Jew.
Yeah.
I am your number one fan on your YouTube Taking the World by Storm channel.
It's making me laugh so much. It's you and Nathan in Australia. That's it, I think.
Who else listens? Does Svenny listen?
Svenny listens.
Dwayne.
It's all of our lot, really. Claire, Loftus, it's all our gang. Really, I don't know. I've got 47, no, how many subscribers? 40-something now. And I've had, yeah, it's funny. I'm only going to do it till nobody listens anymore. And what's really funny, the one I recorded the day before yesterday, because Fred was busy with Call of Duty, so he couldn't download it. Annoying. The one I did the other day, because the camera only records in 15-minute increments, I thought, well, that's weird. I've only done 15 minutes and I did 45. But I forgot because I was looking at the time. So I've done a very long one today, Shaylee.
I know, I've noticed. It's 46 minutes. I was just looking at it. Incrementally, every one of your jig jaws has gone up by about 10 minute increments.
Well, that's because I was a bit thick on that one. But the one I'm going to put up in a minute is shorter. And I'm going to have some sort of stopwatch.
Brilliant.
It's very amateur.
A large hook.
Can I nip in the bud quickly and ask, how do you all know each other? You're name dropping lots of wicked people, I'm sure, but I don't know any of these people. So how have you all met? Where did you all start?
Oh, gosh. Well, Shaylee and I knew each other first. In the 20th century we met. Not prepared to commit any further than that. And then we worked together, didn't we, Shaylee, on Miss Saigon. And...
Did we do it in that order?
Have we started yet?
Yeah, this is it. This is all we're doing. This is all it is. We're just talking nonsense, Jew. It's so
we
up your street.
Glondel, I remember you sitting in the lotus position in the wings. I thought you were really irritating. Why are you doing yoga in the middle of a tech? God's sake. No, you were sitting in a dressing room and you had your legs crossed. Because you'd been to Central, I was cutting you some slack.
I've never seen this lotus position.
You're talking many decades ago of flexibility, Tash.
You're a very lithe young Mark Shale. Try and, imagine that. And then we ended up working together. We stayed in touch socially. We ended up working together on Miss Saigon. This is really random. Shaley got a phone call from a friend of his saying, can you have 2 weeks off to come to the south of France and do AIDA? We were doing this huge open-air art spectacle of AIDA. And I was the stage manager and Shelley was ASM. And I was in the office when he got the call. And he said, can I go to the south of France for 2 weeks? I have 2 weeks off. And I cheekily said, yes, but only if you take me too. And he went, well, hang on. He said, do you want anybody else? And they went, yes. And I said, okay. So we both took 2 weeks off and went to the south of France. Unbeknownst to us, Julia had got the job completely different. There was loads of different stage managers coming in. And we met, all of us met. Shaylee, Jew, and I bonded, mostly because we hated everybody else that was there. And the three of us have stayed in touch ever since.
That is wicked. I love the fact that you've met abroad as well.
Well, not only did we stay in touch ever since, but that you're doing me a kindness there, because actually what really then happened is Sam and Jew, which is why we have you both on together on our comedy podcast, is you then became effectively the world's stage managers in terms of show calling all the biggest events that happen in the world since about 2004, from the Olympic Games in Athens, pretty much all the Olympic Games that followed, and anyone that saw London opening ceremony. you know, that was you two in the control box. I still can't get my head around that fact that that's what you guys have carved a career out doing. I mean, you know, that's quite surreal. So the only question I was going to ask you, because I know we've talked about it socially, but I don't know how you don't poo yourself knowing that half of the planet are watching what you're doing.
Well, we've been talking about that in our talks, funnily enough, because we show this little slide saying how many people there are in the world or how many people there were in 2012, and it is over 7 billion people. And the statistic of how many people turn on their tellies to watch an opening ceremony is 3/4 of the planet. So over 5 billion people. When Julia gives the countdown and says, go, and all the broadcast companies click in, that is 5 billion people watching. But we were talking about it because you just don't think about it. You're so scared about what is coming in terms of your mum watching it and your mates, you know. And I've got Shaley's watching it. He's a stage manager. I've got to get it right. You know, you really don't think about it until you take your headset off at the end. And then the phone starts to ping and it's like people go, oh, well done, guys. Well, hopefully well done. And it's from Australia or from Canada. Or it's just like, and then the realization really hits that you've gone, the world watched that.
Yeah.
But you're so, it's like doing any show. It's like doing any show when you know, call beginners, and it's like you just got to get it right. You don't think about the audience, just go, just got to get this right.
And how does that physically work for the two of you then? Because Ju, you're calling it, and Sam, am I right in thinking you're kind of fighting fires to leave Ju's head into a calling space?
To try and sort of give Ju the space, yes, so that nothing, if something goes wrong, Ju's so ridiculously busy. I mean, her calling is just incredible, you know, and she's like, she'll tell you herself, but just to give standbys 10, 15 minutes before you actually give the word go, because there's so much to say, so many people to acknowledge, yes, I'm standing by, that the last thing she needs is trying to firefight what's going on in the VOM when things aren't there. So I'm trying to coordinate what happens outside of your field of vision so that anything in front of the audience is due and anything behind the scenes is me.
Right.
Sort of.
I still think it's terrifying.
I've realised that my palms sweat. That's how it manifests for me. I realised that my palms sweat just before, but everything else is right. And I don't like the bit leading up to it. I prefer it when we've started. I prefer, it's the anticipation of it is worse than actually doing it, I find, because once you're in it, you can just deal with everything as it comes up. But actually, when you're in the box, because for security, sometimes you have to go in early and it's waiting for it to start is actually worse. But actually for London, we started about 4:00, didn't we, Sam? Because the doors opened and I was queuing geese on and a fisherman. And yeah. I had, yeah, picnic people and maypole dancers. So I was quite busy. And then
honey gatherers, absolutely.
The bit we got really excited about was the opening VT. It wasn't like 2 minutes or 1 minute. It was like 1 minute, 32 and something milliseconds. And I had to queue. I had to because we were going live at 9:00. I was very excited because I had to queue it on something second, a millisecond before. So it would run. So it hit bang on 9:00. So that was my excitement. I felt good about that.
It is absolutely. It's frame specific, the timing that you've got to give. But Ju always does in every ceremony you do, and I'm just before it starts. I mean, literally 30 seconds, she just turns to me, she's going, it's going to be all right. And I go, yeah. I have no idea. I go, yeah. And it's a little sort of, we don't plan it. It's just like, are we all right? I went, yeah, we're all right. It's like, all right, let's go.
How many of these have you done now? Have you done all of them, or you know, because it's Winter Olympics as well? Because
done from Athens to,
well, you started with Manchester, didn't you?
That was the Commonwealth Games. Olympic wise, we've done everyone from Athens to Sochi, and then I consulted on Rio. So, yeah, that was
Wait, did Sam Hunter just say I consulted on Rio?
Yeah,
that's quite cool.
No, because we were going to do it in the moment.
We were going to do it, and then for various reasons that didn't work out. But it all worked out for the best because Ju went on to do, well, you went on to do the Take That tour, I think, and I went on to do Harry Potter. So it was meant. But yeah, I flew out to Rio a few times, and I did their initial schedule for them, and then said, right. Good night, good luck.
I love the way that, you know, as a small step down, coming off the Olympics to Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And well, take that. You know,
I was going to comment on that. That's not much of a step down at all.
it's a great story. And I'll try to tell it as briefly as possible. But when we were going to, we'd gone through Sochi, and Russia was really challenging, wasn't it, Jude? We loved it.
I did love it.
You know, Shayla, you know what it was like. It was bonkers. It was absolutely.
You had to be there. It was like Vietnam.
It was a war zone, but we got through it, and it was an amazing team and an amazing experience. But we were a little sort of battle weary from it. And so when Rio came up, we really wanted to make sure that people would be looked after properly, having gone through the experience of not being looked after properly in Sochi, not just for us, but for how many, you know, loads of people that we bring out. Do you want to bring the kids out? You know, it was like, it's not a safe city. It's a very exciting, vibrant city, but it isn't safe. And they couldn't and wouldn't guarantee anything. You know, it was just like, no, you've got to find your own accommodation. No, there's going to be no transport to make sure you get from one place to the other safe. It was all this sort of malarkey going on. And I'd gone out for the third time and had said to Jew, we've got to get the deal done properly, otherwise this is it. You know, we just can't ask people to work like this. And I was sitting in the office in Rio, and they were saying, you can't have this, you can't have that, you can't have the other. And I felt this sinking feeling, thinking, we're walking away from the Olympics. This is our last one. This is not going to happen. And I thought that. I didn't say it, but I left the office thinking, I've got to phone Jew. And I phoned Jew, and she went, it's not got our name on it, Sam. It's like, it's this is time. It's like, I can't ask the kids to do this. And I said, we can't ask the team to do this. It's like, all right, okay. I was sitting there looking out the window, looking at the beach, going, bloody hell, that's the end of the Olympic adventure. And this is without a word of a lie. 5 minutes later, my phone rang, and it was Gary Beestone, the production stage manager of Harry Potter, and said, please tell me you're not doing Rio. Can you start in 2 weeks? Without a word of a lie. I went, you know, I can. Yes. And
it was awful because it wasn't to say that. I'd been phoned up by the lovely Patrick Woodruff and said, can you come out to Tampa in the morning? And I was like, oh, what? And he said, can you be in Tampa in the morning? I went, well, probably. I've got other work, but I can try and move it around. He said, because Beyonce is looking for a show caller. And I remember thinking, oh,
get fun. And I remember out.
The Rio thing sound fun. And then I thought, it just sounded like the Rio thing just wasn't how we wanted to take a team out. When you're going to take all your really good team and you're going to have a local team and you weren't going to be able to look after them properly, feed them properly, get them anywhere safely. I just had this, and I was dreading telling Sam because I said to my husband, I might be doing Beyonce, and that's made me feel like, oh, that's quite, that sounds fun, a bit of a challenge. It turns out they didn't do it, and that's probably a good thing in the end. But I realised that I really want to do it, and I was dreading telling Sam. I was like, I've got to tell Sam I don't want to do the Olympics, because I was a bit ceremonies-phobic, because I love most of the people there, but there's some people in that job that just make your life absolutely full-on miserable. And if you're going to leave your family, you want to have a nice bunch of people around you who are going to make your life easier rather than hellish. And I just remember ringing Sam and said, Sam, I've got something to tell you. And then we said the same thing, didn't you? So, well, I've just been offered Harry Potter. I said, well, I just might be doing Beyonce. And that was it.
Yeah.
But I didn't do it. But
yeah. that's literally a case of the universe unfolding as it should, isn't it? You know,
it's weird.
That couldn't have happened with any better timing.
I think it's the sound of music, because everything comes from musical comedy. It's when God closes the door, everything else opens the window. You know. Thank you, Maria von Trapp. Absolutely.
You only know that reference because I insistently played that CD when we were in the south of France, because it was the only CD I'd brought with me, was the soundtrack for The Sound of Music. I'm convinced.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's completely ingrained now.
Oh, you also know you had your Burt Bacharach top 10 hits as well. We had Burt Bacharach and Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Did I?
Yeah.
My taste.
You were very cool,
weird.
Shaley.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
very
Natasha,
cool.
Also, that when we were out in the south of France, this Aida thing, which was just carnage. We did a couple of days rehearsals, didn't we? It was just monstrous. We were just like all these volunteers turning up to be centurions and Egyptians and whatever. And it was really badly organised. There was this company that we were working for that we'd never met before. And we sort of ascertained that they were, in fact, the mafia. So I was just like, okay.
It was a complete money laundering exercise.
Yeah, I think it was. And then the weather just got worse and worse. And then in the end, the whole of the south of France was declared a state of emergency because it was just flooding and torrential rain. And we watched the Sphinx, this cardboard Sphinx, get blown out into the Mediterranean.
No way.
And the next day, the management cancelled the gig because the whole place was underwater. But because they were dodgy, we had flights booked back in 10 days' time and they couldn't change our flights. They said, you've got to stay. You've got per diems and you've got accommodation, but you have to just wait until you can fly on that ticket. That day, the sun came out, the NASA was cancelled, and we had 10 days on per diems in the south of France. And that's how we became firm friends. We were taught everybody had to play blackjack and shoot pontoon, and then we went to Monte Carlo.
And then the animals arrived. And do you remember that the Parisians arrived? That there was all, it was literally like a chain of animals. Like
that's right. Because they were coming from Egypt or somewhere, weren't they? They couldn't cancel. And this huge sort of caravan of animals arrived.
It sounds like you're quoting something from the Bible with Noah's Ark and whatnot the sun coming out.
It was biblical in terms of the flooding we were living through. I think about our third day there, we all realised, because we dressed for the south of France, and actually what we needed to dress for was Lake Windermere. So we all went out and tried. Did we send Jew out with a team in the minibus to look for Wellington boots for us all? I seem to remember.
Somebody went.
I did.
You in the van? Because on the motor roller, because they were in the van and you took the wrong turning, and they went, we can't get off the sort of the auto route, and they were heading to Germany.
I could see where I was meant to be, but I just couldn't get to it. And when I flew there, I flew by Dan Air. Do you remember Dan Air?
Yeah.
And I was reading the music on the way, but I was in an electrical storm and the flight dropped. I don't like turbulence anyway, but this flight just dropped. Boom. And I remember grabbing onto the hands of both people either side, just bursting into tears. And they were just like, can't believe it's the most horrific flight.
I remember sitting in the tent, having a production meeting in the tent to discuss whether or not the show could continue. And there was lightning coming through the tent.
Yeah, ball lightning.
Everybody around the table was just sobbing.
It was comedy gold. How we all maintained friendship after. I think we bonded in adversity, didn't we? That was the thing.
We did.
We did laugh. We laughed a lot.
My memory of it was we three bonded as a team, obviously, and with our boss who got us in on the gig, and we had a lovely time. And team is very interesting. You've both mentioned it in terms of your Olympic experiences, because you have this. I'm fascinated in the way teams work, and you have this really interesting system. I think when you were doing those big Olympic gigs and the big event type gigs, you'd almost have a rolling, temporary, informal team structure that would just kind of, you'd get the gigs and then you'd start pulling from that pool of people. Is that right? And actually every new territory you went into, you'd kind of go, wow, this person's fab. You'd wheel them in and they'd become part of the rolling circus that was the stage management team.
Pretty much like that. It's we've got a sort of a core team of people who we love to work with. They've got the same sense of humour and they like red wine and chocolate, and so that's their, you know. the joy of working on these gigs is if you're lucky enough to work abroad, you always have to have local stage managers, because you need to speak the language, they understand, you know, how you work in that particular country. And we've been really lucky to meet fantastic local stage managers, and they, if they're good, tend to come with us. So, you know, by the time we got to Sochi, we had Mexican, Spanish, Canadian, Italian, Greek, you know, all stage managers that we'd met along the way. So we've got this wonderful sort of orange jacket family that you can call upon.
Tell us about the orange jackets. What's that reference, and what is the that banner now for the website? What's that about?
Well, it actually goes all the way back to Manchester 2002. When it was just sort of, when you work in Manchester, you just get soaked every single day. And it's just, you could, if a rehearsal starts at 6 o'clock in the evening, it would be beautiful weather until 5:30. And then you just look out, you go, yeah, of course that cloud is coming towards us. And of course it's going to rain at 6 o'clock. And so we were desperate for ponchos and wet weather gear. And we had absolutely nothing. And the only thing that was available was the gig was sponsored by Tango. So there were these vile orange waterproofs that we all used to wear. We became known as the Orange Jackets. And then when we went to Athens, we sort of, a couple of us had done Manchester, and we just, every team, every department wears a high-vis jacket so that you can recognise people. You know, if you have to go and find casting, it's like, how do you know who's casting? Well, they're yellow, you know. So we had orange jackets again because, oh, let's be the tango team again. And then from Athens, really, we always just became known as the Orange Jacket. Stage management was the Orange Jackets. And we now, you know, we grab those jackets, we grab that colour the first day we get into a new gig, and it's the Orange Jackets. No one would dare wear orange now.
And so what's now orangejackets.co.uk? Because that's off the back of that.
Just orangejackets.uk.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Orangejackets.uk. I beg your pardon.
Yes. That was what was left on the shelf.
Otherwise, you buy a lot of high-vis on that other one.
But that's because now you've kind of, because you've got this wealth of stories and experience, not just stories, but the experience of kind of leadership and management, this now becomes a new string to your respective bows in doing, in certainly doing training and after dinner speaking. That's kind of very much a thing now that you're both invested heavily in, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, so Orange Jacket sort of covers, it's sort of like it's for us to sort of still continue to do our own jobs as production stage manager and show caller. But it also allows us to put together teams of stage management for gigs that we aren't necessarily doing ourselves, but we'll oversee and we're pushing. I mean, I think you've done a couple, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've done, yeah. So we're just pushing, because we've got such a great pool of team that we can send out a team to go. We've done a few that have gone to the Middle East. A couple did Rugby X last year for us when we're doing something else. And then the other big sort of new adventure for us is doing our talks, is doing our sort of backstage at the Olympics masterclass, when we share the stories of how you put a show on that scale on. We've got great photos, we've got great sort of video that we can share with students. And then we've done that for much younger people. So the masterclasses are for stage management and theatre students, because it's very specific about that particular role. But we do a great talk for children, when we talk about the roles that you might find behind the scenes that they may never have heard of. So, you know, if you've got a kid who loves coding, you know, you say, well, you can take that skill and you can make people fly. You know, you could become an amazing automation operator or an automation programmer. So, you know, if you like sewing or needlework or art and crafts.
But you're Marson, not, yeah, Pyro.
Yeah, you're not necessarily... Sort of, there's a great slide we do that says, look, you can make a living out of glitter, snow, water, you know, wind. It's like, you know,
well, you've made a living out of wind for some years, actually.
Years.
Olympic wind.
But the thing is, I'm very passionate about, because I think at schools, I don't think they give you the career, you know, you're always, when I was at school, you were guided away from anything like this. It was always banking or retail or what was deemed a safe job. And ironically, I haven't stopped working, really. Our jobs have been very safe up until the coronavirus, the whole world's gone mad. But I only found out what I wanted to do through work experience, because I was doing A-level drama and I was really pants at acting because I worried too much what people thought, and you can't really worry about that. So I got work experience at the Royal Court by total luck. And then I met a stage manager there who basically showed me, I didn't even know what stage manager was. So she was brilliant and she took me on to another show at the Almeida. And so I was driving up after college from Essex, driving up in my dad's old Cortina estate, driving to the Almeida. And I had the most amazing time. So this really brilliant woman said go to Central or Guildhall at the time. They were the ones to go to.
And you made the wrong choice, clearly, going to Guildhall.
I went to Guildhall. I liked Central. I got in at Central. But I liked the facilities at Guildhall.
So much so that you flooded them.
So much so that I flooded them.
Please tell me that story.
All right. I liked you a minute ago, Tasha. So I was in the first year and I was assistant sound, and the two older students, I won't say their names, but they said, June, look, we were in early and we had to go and take the iron out. We were going to do a sound check. They said, oh, June, nip down, take the iron out. I went, all right. So I ran down backstage, they were chatting away, and I looked at the wall and I saw all of the handles and all the buttons, and I saw the one that said iron. And so I just pulled it and I thought that would take it out. And it turns out that doesn't. And that turns out that I heard this huge clunk, like boom, and then 25 years of stagnant, I mean, thousands of gallons of water started coming down this iron, and every fire alarm for the most of EC1 sounded like it was going off. And I was like, and the night before there'd been a Gorky play called Summer Folk put in, and it was like more straw bales, thousands of pounds worth of straw bales, yeah, like all stacked up, and it was, oh my God. Anyway, this water was thundering down. And if anybody worries about a fire safety curtain, they definitely work. the whole notion of what they're meant to, I've proved it works. Anyway, so it thunders down, it floods the stage, and then everybody starts to come in because they hear the two sound guys on the other, you know, the secondaries hear the noise thundering. Oh my God. We try and pull the brake off because you have to pull the brake, but the three of us, the water pressure was so massive. That was not stopping. And then I didn't really, because I was quite in shock. I couldn't quite take it in. And then I started to feel physically sick. I was like, loads of people came in, the tutors came in. And I remember because it was the first red nose day ever. Anyway, this water went through because the Guildhall floor was made up of individual wooden blocks, about that big. So it went through these wooden blocks to the studio. I was taken down there to see that. And then every conceivable student in the Guildhall was given a mop or a bit of old cloth and were on their hands and knees. I think Bryn Terfel was there. They're big names at the time, you know, like now, they're big names. And, yeah, so people go, oh, it's such an easy mistake to make, Julie. Like, lots of people said that. We're like, oh, it's terrible. But actually, my tutor, Ben, went, you're a fucking idiot. And, what are they called? Thermal space heaters, whatever. Got those
space
in.
Heaters, yeah.
And the floor would just wrap.
Warping.
Like, so, it would have all warped. Yeah.
So I got given props for the next show. And at Guildhall at the time, IKEA didn't exist. So if you needed a tea service, you had to go and prop something worth like 800 quid. So I propped all that. It was all worth a fortune. And then I remember it really clearly. It was a telescope, 600-year-old telescope, beautiful thing. Show had finished. I was going back. So the props room, the returns cupboard, was on the opposite side of the stage. So I was walking across with my tray with my returns. And I tripped on one of my warped wooden blocks. And like slow motion, everything went in the air. And it just... PJ, who was the production manager of the, you know, Guildhall, just went, add it to your tab. And then, I've got known as Drencher for years.
Drencher. I mean, I have to say, I love this story because I've known this story for years and I never tire of hearing it because it has, I'm not going to say it's dogged you for your entire career, but that story has followed you. So everyone knows you as the woman that flooded the Guildhall stage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What's absolutely genius about that is that should have been technically a career killer.
Yeah. Oh, I never ever thought I'd work. So when the Citizens Theatre came to interview at the college, and so I had the interview and I said to Mary, who was interviewing, I said, I've got hands up. I'm going to say this right now. I said, because you will be told, you will be told this fact. I did flood the stage. I made a horrible error and I totally accept if you just think I'm too much of a risk. Anyway, fortunately, she decided to take me on. But I'm still incredulous that I work.
That is just jeez. Now, I have to get you. I'm so sorry, Tash. I have been monopolizing this conversation, but because I know Sam and you so well. But I have to say, we just have to talk very quickly about Jigjaw and put a plug in for Jigjaw.
Oh, nice one, Mark.
I know. Because I was saying to Sam earlier, I'm your number one fan, as you know, on Jigjaw. Although there's a lot of people vying for that particular honour, aren't there? You know, there's a lot of the gang all trying to get in. I was very disappointed that episode 8 hadn't dropped yesterday.
I know. Well, I was staring Fred out because he's now called the Freditor because he's my editor because I've got a really cheap overhead camera and I'm doing it on GarageBand recording it. It's all so cobbled together. But
Fred, we should explain to your son who's
Fred
doing
is
the editing.
My son, yeah.
And Jigjaw is exactly what, in your own words?
Well, I love jigsaws. I love them. A little passion of mine. And I don't get to do them often enough. And I always think, when you're on headsets and comms on shows, people, because you can't see one another, people talk to you much more freely. It's really bizarre. And I know a lot of things about a lot of people. Some of this I can't even repeat on this for you, but people speak very freely. And Jigsaw says, if you're distracted, you speak better. So my plan originally was to have finished my shed. My husband's meant to finish my shed. And then I've got a couple of armchairs and a jigsaw. And then we would do a jigsaw. You'd only see the hands. And then we would chat and speak to one another, or whoever it is, a walk in life, whatever. And then we would talk. And it was called a jigsaw. I was doing a jigsaw or a jaw, but jigjaw. And it's basically become that. But because of this whole coronavirus, I haven't got anyone into my shed. So I'm relying on emails and things I'm making up about people.
So to be clear, it's an overhead camera looking at your hands, not doing a jigsaw very quickly or effectively, while you just talk shit.
Nutshell. And I'm getting more comments on my, everyone with OCD that I know, the jigsaw situation is driving them absolutely up the wall. I get more notes on how to do a jigsaw than actually what I'm saying.
And lots of notes about you need to iron that tablecloth.
That's note number one.
I have to say, for the person that might listen to this who hasn't seen Jigjaw, it is utter genius, in my humble opinion. and it's on YouTube. If you just YouTube search Jigjaw, and it's just listening to Jude chattering inanely.
Jude, just tell the Radio Julia story, because that is brilliant. And it's sort of like, that's where all the Canland stuff comes from.
Oh, yeah. So we were in Vancouver. And with the hours we were doing there were lunatic, weren't they, Sam? It was, we were there for hours from like 7:30 in the morning till sometimes 4 in the morning for dinner.
It was Jude's first
show calling
role. She'd been the deputy on the other Olympics, but it was the first time she was the show caller.
And so we were chatting and we were just chatting. And again, like I was saying, I can speak to lots of people and you can make up rubbish. You can pretend that somebody's saying something at the other end. And they go, don't say I'm saying that. And it's hilarious. Anyway. So we're there for hours. And because there are so many operators that are doing long hours as well, it's just that whole, I like people anyway, so I find it very easy to chat. Anyway, chat, hours and hours a day, then doing a bit of rehearsal and then, you know. Anyway, NBC were up at Grouse Mountain, which was the skiing, and they were putting all their scanners up. And they were getting through frequencies like taxis and police and stuff like that. And they sort of, one guy kept hearing me talking. So he's
30 miles away. This is 30 miles away from the stadium. Yeah. It's one of the Olympic sites for sports. And they were setting up all their gear. And they're hearing, they can tune in, and they're hearing Julia's show calling channel.
But they couldn't work out they heard my voice, but they didn't understand what it was or where it was coming from.
So could they hear the conversation, or is it just your voice?
Just my voice. My voice. So one guy tuned a radio in the office. He was responsible for all the radios and the scanners and all the aerials. So he just put it there because he said, "Jude, mate, she's from a place called Essex. I don't know what I know her name is Julia." So they called it Julia of Essex and they put a channel on the radio called Julia of Essex. Anyway, so they would sit there for hours. And so he'd have a radio in his office. And then another guy said, "Oh, actually, can I have that channel on my radio?" So he tuned. And in the end, he tuned loads of radios to a frequency called Julia of Essex. And they all tried to glean what it was we're doing. And then they worked out.
The local police. Yeah.
And then they worked out where we were and what we're doing, because I was sort of saying cues and cueing music and probably there for the call. They heard everything because by dint of scanning. Anyway, so they had the radios going, didn't they? He said the radios going in the car and the minibuses, they were all listening. So two work back where they managed to get some in the hotels just so they could keep listening. And anyway, one day this on the panels we've got this thing appeared, this random, I can't remember what they called themselves. It might have been said NBC or something. Or Kevin.
This was Kevin. Just Kevin, popped up.
So Kevin pops up on my panel. I hadn't put it there, asked for it. No one knew how it got there. And basically, the radio teams had gone to Grouse Mountain and they started chatting and they were listening to the channel. They said, "Oh, we know who that is. It's the girl that we're working." They were doing audio stuff. So they worked out how to get him onto our panel. And so Grouse Mountain started talking to us. And so we used to give shout outs to NBC and Kevin.
And there's one guy, Kevin, who was sort of like obsessed with it.
Yeah, and so he's the one that started it all off. And then he met us, didn't he, Sam? He came to he came in with flowers and champagne and stuff. He was so excited to meet us. And so when I shout out to KP in New York on Jigjaw, it's him. And he's messaged me with loads of notes. Like, oh, you can do this, you can do that. So complicated. But he's like, yeah, so he started off really. So
because the first time he came, they got him to come to the stadium and he didn't know why. He thought he was just doing some work there. Yes, and they brought him into the control room and just went, Kevin, this is Julia. And he went really pink. He was just sort of like, oh my God, I've met my heroine.
He came back
with champagne and flowers. But the first time he came through the door, was like, just like, who's this guy? And they went, Kevin, Julia. And he was like, oh my God, welling up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. They told me the story, didn't they, there, lot?
That's how Radio Julia was born.
That's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. And you haven't stopped talking since, basically.
Never, no. Which is why Matt is thrilled that I go and sit in the shed. He hasn't once said, don't do it, Ju.
He built the shed.
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to have a hobby to get you out of the house.
Well, it's funny. It's just half an hour, but if I could do the edit, if I could put the cheap camera images to the words, I'll be all right. I've got to learn that. Don't rely on Fred.
These new skills in lockdown, you see. See what you're going to be.
Did you like the bit with Svenny, Mark? Did it make you laugh? I had a technical issue.
Yes, it's all been making me laugh a lot, as has spending this hour with you both now. So, and thanks again for giving
thanks
up the time.
Thanks for inviting
Very
us.
Lovely.
Tash, you've just been sitting there on this Zoom with a grin on your face as wide as a Cheshire
cat.
Honestly, right,
I'm so starstruck to speak to you both. I'm not going to lie.
You, darling, you've been starved. Clearly, lockdown has gone to your brain.
It's just because she has to deal with me. She's not dealt with real people.
Well, there is that, of course, yes.
Exactly
it's
that.
All relative. Yeah. Well, good to meet you, Tash.
You both as well.
Nice to meet you, Tash.
We'll come up with some more stories if you need them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's do it again.
We're very, very old and we have a wealth of material. But you need to do it now before we forget.
To write everything down.
Sir. Honestly, you know, early onset. Catch us quickly.
Are we saying that Zoom is basically our dementia time capsule?
Oh, no.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's also good, though, because it writes your name on it so I can remember what your name is.
Oh, thank God for that as well.
Bye, everyone.
Love you.
Lovely to meet you both.
Bye.